Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Josh Brown, why do I sound slightly ill?
I don't know, man. Like, you seem fine, but your voice is just a little bit off.
It's just a little bit off, so I do apologise for being a little bit curdled, a little bit off, a little bit stinking up the fridge. Doing
you're
what
stinking
you can.
Up this gaff, I'm yeah, telling you that.
It's Pong, 1973, left, right and centre. But for now, it's also the wind-up, where we pick up some sort of topic to debate over or just run down whatever's happening in the world of gaming, the most interesting things to talk about. Josh Brown,
hi.
There's an actual new video game.
Can you believe it?
Can you believe it? The first one since, what, 3 months?
And
when was Elden Ring.
Well, we were trying to figure this out in a Tesco the other day.
Yeah.
We were like trying to do the math of how long has it been since Elden Ring came out, because it feels like...
Remember back in the day when we had new video games?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. But it's very apt as well that,
yes,
you know, we were playing, and it's Trek to Yomi.
It is.
By the way.
Yes.
If you guys don't know, that came out on
Trek
Friday.
Trek to Homies.
It's on Game Pass. You can,
yes,
buy it on PlayStation 4 or 5 or what have you.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And me and Scott have essentially... kind of differing opinions.
We had a hell of a weekend of disagreeing, because
I
saw Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, genuinely think it's one of the worst films I've ever seen. You saw Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, absolutely loved it.
I really did.
You played Trek to Yomi and said, this is one of the worst things I've ever played, or whatever. You gave up after like the first hour. You're like, this is horrible.
Yeah.
I played Trek to Yomi, this is one of the best things I've ever played. So we were very classic us for the last weekend, and we've traded a lot of back and forth hot takes. Movie stuff, we're going to have to, can you give a 30 second or a few seconds thoughts?
A few seconds thoughts,
on the old
I
Doctor
certainly
Strange?
Can. Doctor Strange, because you slated it last week's podcast. I really rated it, you know.
Right.
It's not kind of a tectonic shift for the Marvel Cinematic Universe in terms of its story, but as a kind of like isolated standalone thing, I really rated it. I thought what they did with Strange and Wanda was great. Sam Raimi's direction is awesome and has some of the most inventive set pieces in the MCU, and that was enough to get me by. A lot of the stuff that I imagine some people are going to be really interested in, like the Illuminati kind of questions and all the stuff around potential cameos, I wasn't there for that.
No.
So that stuff, you know, kind of just went straight over my head. But the actual character stuff, the actual set pieces, it's not one of my favorite MCU movies, but
no,
it's good, I think.
I will say that there was no character writing in that movie. I thought
hurts
there was
me.
One scene towards the end where it actually felt like two people were actually having a conversation. But
hurts
the rest
me, yes,
of it, I just... Who's America Chavez? What's going on? Who's this person that we're hanging the entire movie on? They're just... Whatever. This is a thing for if
true.
We ever launch a movie version of The Wind-Up. And
yes,
people can come find us on social media. I tweeted out saying, move over Thor The Dark World. This is the new worst MCU movie.
That's like... Listen. Not to turn this into a film podcast. I totally get it. People
yes,
being divisive. It being divisive,
right,
sorry. I totally get people coming out of it feeling disappointed at certain aspects. Mm-hmm. There are certain flaws with the movie that I fully agree with the criticisms of. That said, good Lord, comparing this to Thor The Dark World, man, is just crazy to
Thor
me.
The Dark World's Asgardian segments were better put together than all of this. I'll
nuts.
Sit on and buy that.
That is nuts.
The only thing worse
man.
Than this was The Eternals. That's only because I've not seen it. This was barely a movie.
You wind me up.
Barely a movie. Anyway, speaking of things to continue getting wound up about, Trek to Yomi, which
yes,
is Flying Wild Hog's newest game. I don't actually know what they've done before, but it is published by Devolver, so it kind of had a lot of marketing around it in terms of of being the next big Devolver release. And it's like a black and white, sort of like an ode to Kurosawa era Japanese cinema, or like old school Japanese cinema. All black and white, all very grainy, all like, that's the thing that I'm absolutely loving about it. But I think you should open, because there is especially one major massive flaw, and that's what a lot of people started noticing in the gameplay footage around launch, and that's the combat, because the combat is very clunky, and I just sort of had to force myself to accept it. And I think that once you unlock a few moves with it, and there's enough of like an animation priority to it, that if you sort of just go with what they're trying to go for and give you these cool, well choreographed sword fights, you can have fun with it, but it's clunky AF.
It really is. You know, I was looking forward to this game all month. I thought it came out last month, and I was messaging you being like, "Whoa, I can't wait for this game to come out." Now it's finally out. I jumped into it on Friday night, and yeah, the first thing that I noticed was just how rough the combat is, because like you said, you know, it looks beautiful. The presentation of the game is incredible, but the actual playing of it, which is what you're doing virtually every second in the game, just to me, man, is so boring.
Really?
It's so...
Because the thing is, they do like a trade-off where they give you like really like kind of basic, almost tank controls.
Yeah.
Like old school Resident Evil. For me, it reminded me a lot of Onimusha, like the original couple of Onimushas, especially two, where it's just lots of big wide-angled shots and you're just a tiny little dude running around inside these shots. But the only gameplay you have is left analog stick and then one interaction button.
Totally.
I mean, love that.
The thing is, I'm coming off... Sekiro, you know, I'm coming off these games that are so just visceral and so tactile in terms of the combat. And yeah, it's not fair to maybe compare a $15 game to a you know, AAA game like Sekiro.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, it's just, it just didn't do anything for me at all. And I don't agree that they're even well choreographed fights, because I'm using these same combos over and over. And I know that you continue to unlock more. You know, I unlocked a lot more in my second session where I got finishes. I got, you know, combos between heavy and light attacks. Mm-hmm. I got all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't find that they actually added anything to the combat mechanically. Like, there were extra options.
Yeah.
But the enemy variety, at least in my first hour and a half, has been so limited that, you know, it's just block their attacks, you know, move back a little bit, then strike back.
See,
it didn't have that level of tactility that I needed, you know. I might as well have been swiping my sword through just air.
Well, the thing, I think that's all intentional in terms of enemy variety, because how many of those old school films are, as soon as a samurai enters the picture, every single bandit gets cut down in one swipe. So like, that's what that felt like to me. And like, as much as the combat itself, the thing that I think people get hung up on, and I was like, this is such a weird beat, is that it is all side scrolly, it's all like side on camera angles in terms of combat, or it has been so far anyway. I'm about an hour and a half in, but you have to press X/A to turn around, and you do, like, you'll fight, you know, fighting dudes coming at you from the left, but someone's about to hit you from behind, so it's like, okay, hit with square, triangle, or X and Y, and then press that other button, face button, to turn around and fight someone else.
Yeah.
Now you do get turn around moves, and you start getting more positioning stuff as you go forward, and it feels like they're building this like whole thing around positioning. And like, you know, when you deflect, you get the ability to then switch places with someone. So if you're fighting a whole bunch of different dudes, then you can factor that in. But it just feels a bit clumsy because of how much, like, the reason I said cinematic, I'd stand by. I think they have like really gorgeous animations, like, and in the, especially with like some of the backdrops, like some of the places, not to give away the story, but like that you're going to be fighting in amongst some dilapidated villages or some villages that are being attacked. This is the opening of the game. And so there's a lot of stuff going on behind you, and they really fill that frame out. So like when you're on like a bridge, or you're fighting in front of a waterfall or a river or something, and the frame is filled out behind you, and all you see is like the silhouettes of both your guys, like, you know, parrying once and then swiping once, and blood arcs everywhere. That looks so cool.
It looks cool. It absolutely does. It's a game
it just
that
feels like hell.
Visually is incredibly impressive. If I, you know, watched you playing through it,
right,
I would have thought it would be like the best game I had ever played. But for me, it's exactly the same as Guardians of the Galaxy, in that every time I boot it up and I'm in kind of like a cutscene, or if I'm just walking around and I'm drinking it in, and I'm just thinking, I cannot believe the developers have achieved this. Look at this world, you know, like, look at the atmosphere that they've packed into it. Look at these little animations that are here and there. Look at these details. And then I get into a combat encounter, and then I turn it off after 10 minutes because it's not engaging me in a way at all. I do think it's like recommendable, especially if you've got Game Pass, to give it a try, because you might get further with the combat than me. But right now, you know, I was telling you this last night, I almost want to put it down and not force myself through it, because I'm in such a mechanical driven gaming mood at the moment that this isn't scratching the itch, and it's almost not fair because I can't really put it up against, you know, well, that's, things that do this stuff better.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't think that's what they're going for. Like I've played, like I said, about an hour and a half, and they've given me more abilities, like being able to turn around on the spot, do counters in a different direction. I've unlocked the ability to counter regardless of which direction I'm being attacked, and so you can do stylish little turnarounds and blocks and parries and stuff. And sometimes those things chain together. Like, I did have like a satisfying thing, because like they want to make it so that every sword swipe pretty much kills a guy, unless you're fighting someone who's like a boss or something. And so like that, but I like that. Like, I like chaining those things together, and that's where the satisfaction comes. But I absolutely think that the major positive and what they're going for is the cinematic side of it, the framing of like the story they're telling of like Hiroki being this samurai who leaves the village and goes on like a revenge mission and what comes from that. And so like I was just drinking in the visuals. I think it looks unbelievably good. Like, it looks real for the most part. Like, it looks like an old piece of film that's playable. I love that stuff.
I think one of the big differences between my playthrough and yours, it seems to be from what you're saying, is that I'm playing it on hard, or the challenge difficulty.
Oh, see, I went down the middle one. I always go medium on like a gamer.
Just because I was, again, like I was after, I was like, okay, I like the idea of this combat. I want to see what it has to offer. I want to see all of its tactical options. And yeah, so it's when you're talking about, you know, every enemy goes down in one slice or so, they absolutely do
no
not.
No way. Oh, so I don't like that they changed that.
Things a lot more. So I might actually go through it and knock the difficulty down and just kind of breeze through it. I hesitate to say that that's a conclusion, because if you want the combat to just be skipped, I don't think that's necessarily a cool thing. But
like, you know, thematically, or the story they're telling, or the power that Hiroki has as like a lifetime samurai, it makes sense that you deflect once, cut down. Next guy, deflect, cut down. Maybe you do a combo that it stuns a guy and then you finish them and behead them. And it's like, that is why I love it. Like if you take that away and you're like hounding me with enemies or doing what you're saying where they take a couple of hits, that gets away from the idea that the sword does, like what the sword is. I think that's funny that the hard mode would do that. This is a complete side note. I don't know why you come down on this, but this would be the weirdest thing to say. I never trust a hard mode in a game. I just don't trust it. I feel like developers design something in a certain way and hard mode is after that. Like, if hard was what they were designing for the majority of development, it would become their medium. Like, it would become their go-to. And so this is it's a weird thing to phrase.
Yeah.
But, you know, you think of the way From Software designed their games, there's no difficulty sliders. And I always feel like if any developer has to put in difficulty sliders, then they're thinking about HP allocation, attack damage, maybe enemy aggression or AI, but they come after. So I'm always like, what was the most purest version of what you designed before you then tweaked it? And so I always go down medium, because I don't trust that you'll have got it right, quote unquote, in the hard mode.
I know what you mean. There are a lot of lazy hard modes out there. Not necessarily saying that this is one of them, but at the same time, there are so many good hard modes out there. Yeah. I mean, you know,
Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Exactly, you've talked about Final Fantasy VII Remakes before. You know, I really like The Witcher's hard mode, for instance. There are a lot of good hard modes out there, so I don't just like kind of write them off, especially if, I want something a bit more challenging. And to be fair, this was a game where I didn't just want to breeze through it. I was like, okay, show me what you've got in terms of, you know, the mechanics that you have here. And it just didn't quite click. Maybe now that you mentioned this, though, I will go back through it and try it on a more kind of story-driven cinematic level, but when we eventually get to the story, I also have some problems with that as well.
No, we can pivot into the story in a sec. The thing is, with this combat system, you can drill it down to a very specific animation, and it's the way that parries work, because they don't, I don't know if it's different on hard, if the timings are different, but in medium or regular or whatever, you don't parry in the way that every other video game in history does, where you're waiting to hit the button as a thing is about to connect. You have to hit parry as their animation starts.
Yeah.
So even as their sword is made, like, you know, at the backswing about to come in, that's when you parry, because I mentioned animation priority earlier. That's how you get those cinematic fights. Because if you get the timing right, then you also swing in and just block them, and then you take them out. And that stuff feels really, really cool. But you need to retrain your brain in terms of how the parries work. It was weird, because the first couple of times I got hit, and then I parried beautifully and killed a guy, and I got the achievement saying, like, won the first fight. And I was like, that felt incredible. And so I was like, okay, I get it, but it's clumsy and weird.
I am smiling over here for those of you who obviously can't see me, because after coming off Sifu and after coming off Sekiro, who has just incredible
the most lightning fast parries ever. Yeah.
Incredible parry based gameplay. And the minute that I realized that parries weren't for me in this game was almost the moment it was dead.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a problem with retraining my brain. I kind of got that down quickly. It was just, I thought the parries weren't satisfying, and I thought they were a little boring to pull off, because I was pulling them off all the time, you know, even for like these harder enemies that, you know, take so many hits. And I was just doing it, I was hitting people, and it became like Assassin's Creed 2. You know, when you're just not even engaging, you're just waiting for someone to attack, you're hitting the button. Mm. And even on hard mode, the timing for the parries are incredibly
it's still
generous.
Huge, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's, you're not going to miss them really, as long as you see that little bit of light that
see, the thing is, like,
happening. And I just thought, like, it was cinematic, sure, for the first time, but the idea of doing that for a full 5 hours just, it wasn't really appealing.
It's weird because for me, like, the combat is such a small portion of why I'm loving it. Like, it is absolutely the, I keep using cinematic. It's so immersive. Like, the whole, everything is so rainswept and muddy. The village that you're in feels like it's really struggling. And even in one of the opening shots of the game, you walk down the main street of the village and you see the temple that you're training at, or the dojo, like at the top of the stairs and everything. And it's like the whole place is sort of like looking up to who you are and like who you represent and everything and the power that you have as a samurai in that world or in that village. And then people even say that, like, you know, oh my god, there's a samurai here, like, we're all saved. And like, I love the way they frame all that stuff. And like I said, because it's so rainswept and stormy, and
yeah,
like, I know there's a bit, it's a bit half an hour, 45 minutes into the game, where like a lightning bolt strikes like a really big oak tree like behind you as you're fighting, and you're just fighting guys in front of this tree as it falls in like what feels like slow motion. I was like, this is the coolest thing in the world.
I mean, yeah, I would 100% agree with that. You know, I think it's a great testament to fixed camera angles, because the compositions that the developers have come up with every single time you go onto the next screen in the next fight and what have you, like, it's always incredibly well staged. It's always beautiful to look at. Like you said, it has this tangibility with the smoke, with the fire, with the lightning in the background. It has this depth to it, a depth to the image that is just incredibly striking. And like you said at the start as well, you know, a great ode to the samurai movies that it's obviously based on. It's just, While I can appreciate that, it's something I'd rather watch than play.
Right, right. I think it also, like, I mean, it's worth saying that it can fall down at a moment's notice if you miss that timing window, or like if you, you know, you get mobbed by a few guys while you're trying to press the button to attack in the other direction. Like, that stuff, it can quite easily fall apart. I quite appreciate them sort of going, like, it's like if you pie charted it, it's like 70% like storytelling and immersion and just drink in this, like this really painterly sort of version of this world that we've done, and then 30% combat. But there is a lot of combat to be done, but in terms of the appeal, it's everything other than the combat. But for me, I think it's just like, I like what they're going for, that I can kind of, I just remember, because I read a lot about the NAF combat, and then I saw it in some of the gameplay clips, and I was like, oh god, this looks terrible. And then when I like slay my first couple of enemies, I was like, okay, it's enough, I can go with this. Like, if all I have to do in a game is push square literally to get through, but everything else is great, I'll still like that, because that's kind of just what they're going for. And like, yeah, it's weird because it is quite clunky, but I've gotten more fleshed out moves as I've gone. And we pivot into the story stuff though, because what's your thoughts on that stuff? Like, you play as Hiroki, who, like, you initially play as them as a child, learning how to fight and everything. And then we'll not do too many spoilers. Like, I mean, we can't really, we've only played it for like an hour and a bit anyway. But yeah, you play as Hiroki and they're the main character. They grow up as a samurai, and then something happens to the village and they go on a bit of a revenge kick. And that's as much as I'm going to say for now.
100%. I think that's all you need to say, because again, like I said, I've not played loads of this game. It's just the fact that it has made a bad first impression on me, both in terms of the combat and in terms of that story. And it's not necessarily because that story that you mentioned there and that setup is told poorly, like we were saying, you know, it's told in a really cinematic way. Mm-hmm. It's just that the idea of, you know, a kid seeing their village decimated, growing up to, you know, get some kind of revenge, is a story that I've seen in both games and movies so many times over the past year or so. You know, I've just seen it in The Northman. I played it in Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I had a kind of version of it in Sekiro. We had it in Sifu, you know what I mean? We had versions of this so many different times. And when that was the setup, I was like, I understand why you've done this. I understand what inspirations you're pulling from, but I just kind of thought, can I go through another one of these again? Can I go through this setup in this arc one more time? And they might do something interesting with it later on. I'm definitely not saying that they won't. Mm. It was just that kind of gut feeling first impression of, this is a little bit rote, man.
Yeah, it's weird because for me, when you messaged me that like over the weekend, and I was like, I didn't even think of it that way, because I'm always just like, well, what are they going for? How well did they deliver on it? And in this case, I was like, well, this is such a well-worn trope, almost not necessarily birthed by the movies that it's paying tribute to, but like just as a genre trope, I'm like, okay, what are you going to do with it? And this is going to be more subjective, where like I can take a very passionately delivered basic thing, if it's just, even if it's just like revenge mission 101, if it's done well enough, I'll still appreciate that or enjoy it or whatever. And not that you're you're like not, but I mean, that's my overall approach kind of thing. But also I was like, this feels so intentional in like you're painting with a certain set of brushes in a certain way, like certain, you know, wide brushes that we've seen many times before that I'm going to look for the details in between. So it was, for me, it was, I think the character's called Aiko. I liked her agency in the opening, like even the fact that she's accompanying you around the village and is able to have some agency in what then happens later.
Yeah.
And then what happens after the time jump where she is then placed. I really loved that. And so it felt like if you're going to take old school expected tropes, I know this is all sounding so vague, but then I was going to notice the smaller things. And the thing that they do with one of the attackers, let's say, in the village, the way that scene goes, I didn't expect. But which is also all to say, you were saying that you hope they do something with it going forward. They very much do.
Okay.
And it's like, I mean, even if you know what Yomi is, like you'll kind of know that you'll know to expect something else, let's say. I thought Yomi was a village for the longest time.
Right.
It ain't.
I have no idea what
exactly.
Yomi is.
So I didn't know that for a while. But yeah, where the story goes, I didn't expect that. And so where I am in the story is not what I expected at all. And so I'm kind of just curious where they go from that. And they do a lot more personable stuff with Hiroki, like with the village and sort of the weight of protecting the village and what that meant. And they do a lot with that. I want to keep it as vague as possible. If enough people talk about this, maybe we'll do a spoiler cast or something for it. But yeah, it's very true that it's a rote setup.
Yeah.
But that kind of made me go, I hope you're doing something cool with this. And then I think they've done enough. Yeah. But I thought they'd done enough even in the opening 10 minutes. So like, there is that.
Well, this is it. And I must admit, like, this is incredibly subjective on my part, because it's just because the combat didn't engage with me, and it's because that story, I've just seen it too many times that I didn't even want to give it the benefit of the doubt.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Out because, you know, in that moment I was thinking, well, if I wanted this story and I wanted to appreciate it rather than having to, appreciate it after slogging through some bad combat. Mm. I would just watch a movie. Would you not do something else?
That whole opening kind of half hour though, where it's lots of really big wide angles and lots of really well framed shots of the village. Were you not like, oh my god, this is like a next level thing?
Oh, immediately! Like when you first get control of your character and you're just doing kind of like the training and you're going through the village, I thought this is unbelievable. This has something to it. Mm-hmm. But then there was just so much combat. It was the exact same thing as Guardians, man, where every time I wasn't in combat, I was thinking, this is an incredible game. I want to play more of it. But it's just, you know, combat is just such a large part of games generally. And if you don't get that right for me, or you make it something that you just want to skip, something's gone wrong.
I wonder if we should do video games that should have ditched their combat. And yeah. I might throw out BioShock.
Ooh.
Because BioShock is better, I think, would be better as a walking sim, let's say, as a Gone Home style exploration first person thing than any other combat that's in the BioShock games.
In Classicos fashion, I disagree, but that's the exact kind of sentiment I have with Yomi at the moment, in that like there's a great game in there. It's kind of like when, you know, Soma, the game from, is it Frictional Games? Who did Amnesia?
Frictional or Fractional, yeah.
Anyway, not the point. The point is that was kind of like a horror story-driven experience, but they actually released a mode where you could essentially take the enemies out and skip the stealth sections, and it's like, if they could do that with Yomi, maybe I would enjoy it more.
It's interesting because, like, in Yomi's case, like I said, it's like serviceable just enough. But the whole time I'm playing it in the combat bits, I am like, this is ropey, this is clunky, and it does, as the game stretches out, as the levels get bigger, you do start getting some weird checkpoint problems where like the only time you get checkpointed is at the shrines where you get your health back.
Yeah.
But some of them are hidden. Some of the checkpoints are like hidden, and I was like, why? Like, I encourage me to explore, but the only thing I'm finding when I explore is a checkpoint, so I then have to backtrack through the secret path to get back on the main path to do the next thing I was going to do anyway. Just checkpoint me there. Like, that's weird. But yeah, like there are potentially issues with that. I guess I'll see how it goes. But yeah, I'm loving it, but I guess I'm going to see how it goes. Like, and they've given me, like I said, a few additional moves. I've definitely gotten used to the back and forward weird switching stance thing. And when you string a bunch of moves together and you do take everyone out in this big blur of claret and beheadings, I'm like, this is sick.
Yeah.
But that is quite few and far between just because of how many animations you're fighting to even do something cool in the first place.
I mean, I think I would echo that and say that I think everyone should give it a go if they're able to, especially if you've got Game Pass, because, you know, you're not really losing out other than
your time.
Your time, I suppose. So definitely try it. You know, it's telling that the reviews are so scattered. You know, you've got 8s, 9s out of 10s, you've got 5 out of 10s and what
like
have
Dr.
you.
Like Dr. Strange!
Exactly, like Dr. Strange. It's going to come down to a lot of personal preference stuff. And on that final note, I will also say that my favorite Kurosawa films are actually his later in color ones, so maybe that colors.
No, totally. Was Ran? Ran was one of his, wasn't
Ran
it?
Ran was, yes.
Ran is my absolute favorite.
Ran
and that
owns,
was,
man.
Yeah, Ran absolutely owns. Yes. That thing is incredible. I have just a literal feat of cinema, the amount of people that are in every one of those frames. Oh, go watch Ran. If anyone's listening to this and you're thinking about Kurosawa films, if Tractor Yomi or even Ghost of Tsushima's Black and White Mode or whatever has made you think, I should go watch some old school Japanese cinema, go watch Ran.
Yes.
It is not in black and white, but it's a hell of a thing. That thing is incredible. Next, so we thought we would usually do a mix of, you know, opinionated stuff and then some news stuff. We'll run some different news stories down because there's a handful of things going on. One word and a number, Titanfall 3.
Is not happening.
No, it's not at all. But this comes from a GameStop pre-order, which is probably just an error, almost definitely just an error, because it is listed for late 2022. There's no way this thing's true. Jeff Grubb initially got out from GameSpeak, got on Twitter and just said, look, guys, I was joking when I initially said Titanfall 3 became Apex Legends, or like, lol, Apex Legends is Titanfall 3, but that is the case. They had something in the works that became Apex Legends, and Titanfall 3 is not happening, which is a shame, because I still maintain that Titanfall 2 is the best first-person shooter. How, give me a time frame.
I mean, like, I would not maintain that, but I would agree that it owns, and I want Titanfall 3 because they had such a special thing there. And then we got Apex Legends, which a lot of people love. It's not for me, but why not? Why not a Titanfall 3, Scott? Why can't we get one?
I don't really think. I mean, Respawn are inundated with projects right now, and it feels like Titanfall. I think just because of just how much Titanfall 2 bombed sales-wise, not any reflection of its quality whatsoever. But as the story goes, if people don't know, it was released in between Call of Duty and Battle. field.
Yes.
Front field.
Final field.
Just completely obliterated its sales. Ridiculous. Felt like it was sort of EA's way of trying to contend with Call of Duty's at the time future direction, and then it just got completely wiped out, and then people bought Battlefield anyway that year. And so it was just a complete mess. And I just assume that makes it very hard to get a Titanfall greenlit. Because they're sort of like, they're seeding some stuff in Apex Legends. Like, there are some companies mentioned that are in Titanfall. Like, but even for me, as a massive Titanfall fan, I didn't care about the companies that are in charge of the mechs or whatever. It's all about the gameplay. So I don't know if they eventually do some sort of, in the best way possible, free-to-play Titanfall, just to get that gameplay in front of people. Because Titanfall 2, the reason I think it's the best ever is the locomotion. It's the thing that Call of Duty was trying to get to. I don't think anyone does it better. Like, the wall running, the sliding, like, nothing else plays as smoothly as that.
No.
And, like, connects with you. Like, you'll think in the moment or in the split second of, like, I want to run up that wall, jump and slide under there, and then uppercut that guy and do whatever. And you can just do it. And it just works.
It's so exciting and still remains exciting. Mm. You know, even all of these years later, Titanfall 2 still is incredible. And yeah, I would agree. You know, I want to see what they can do with that kind of set of mechanics, that sense of locomotion in a tighter team-based game like Titanfall rather than Apex Legends, which is obviously much bigger Battle Royale focused. I would take a free-to-play Titanfall if they had the chance to make it. But like you said, you know, Respawn has so much on their plate. They've got Apex Legends. They've got Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order 2. They've got a bunch of other Star Wars games.
The first-person Star Wars thing.
The first-person one, the little tactical thing that they're working on. They have so many projects in the work. In the works, and is it Vince Zampella?
Yes.
Who is the main guy in Respawn? He's also now in charge of Battlefield, you know? He's overseeing the Battlefield franchise. Like, that studio...
That man's emails are full.
That man's
he's
emails...
Not moving all day.
...are full in that team. That development studio is juggling a lot of plates.
Yeah. I think I've just thought, if they... Because they're doing, assumedly, according to the rumors, according to the leaks, whatever, a first-person Star Wars game, kind of like the old Dark Forces stuff, but I have to assume bolstered by the Apex Legends engine or movement. If they do, like, a first-person wall-runny, you know, Jedi game... I might forgive that we don't get a Titanfall 3. It's just, if let me run really fast, do some cool melee stuff, grab a blaster for a bit and ping it off as I'm running off the wall.
I am might out of the game of saying that if one team takes what they're known for, and applies it to Star Wars, it will work. Because I used to say that all the time with Star Wars Battlefront, Scott. I used to be like, if DICE can just take what made Battlefield great and apply it to Battlefront, it could be something special. And granted, they eventually did get there with Battlefront 2, but that was two full attempts. So I wouldn't want to say that they could make a Star Wars Titanfall game. I would love it if they did. So I just can't. I can't put my faith in EA in that way anymore.
Also, as much as I'm like, oh, it'd be really cool to replicate the movement systems and the general sort of dynamics and everything else, there'd be no mechs. Because mechs don't exist in the Star Wars universe.
True.
As far as I know, there's never been a single mech in the Star Wars universe.
I wouldn't want to say that. I'm not sure.
AT-ATs, AT-STs, I guess.
Well, yeah,
I don't class them as mechs. I class mechs as like walking, mechin' things.
Well, they talk in Titanfall, don't they? Yeah.
A little bit. They sort of make little noises at each other. I think the sniper one does. But anyway, yeah, Titanfall 3, the current leak is absolutely not true, even though it would be lovely if it was. Next thing down, though, is according to Kotaku, there's another Mafia game coming. Now, it's going to be set before the trilogy. But what's interesting is that Hangar 13, the developers of at least Mafia 3, I forget how far back they go being classified as Hangar 13.
Just 3, I think.
Because they were made from like the groups of 2K that made Mafia 1, 2, and whatever. But yeah, Hayden Blackman, who's the founder and like, you know, company lead of Hangar 13 has left as of 2022. I think that goes back further, but officially he's left as of 2022. And they've had a lot of staff shakeups, and Hangar 13 have really struggled to bring something together since Mafia 3, which was 2016, I want to say.
Wow. Was it really?
Either that or 2017?
Around there, yeah.
It's been a while. Uh-huh. And even Mafia 3, for as much as I genuinely loved that game, like, I think it dropped off eventually, but like, I think that, like, there was a, I wrote something back then, I forget the hell it was called now, but I wrote something about how awesome it was. And it got shared around. We were in the Super Bowl. There was one time What Culture's quotes were on the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Because it was, I can't even think what quote it was now. Something they took anyway from my positive write-up of Mafia 3. And the reason was, I thought Mafia 3 had the same music and gameplay gut punch in a positive way as the old GTAs did. Mm. And I thought it was just like, here's a sense of place. Like Vice City, San Andreas had such a sense of place. And Mafia 3 was like, here's our take on New Orleans and the music and the bayou. And it was like, I just was enamored by it. I thought it was like, this is such immaculately done. And the whole opening stuff as well is really well done too. But Hayden Blackman has now left, who oversaw that project, and Hangar 13, like I said, have struggled to put stuff together. So what do you think of them sort of going back to their roots? Like, new team, set way before the trilogy. The rumor is that it's set in the 20s, and it'll be something like the Prohibition era.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that stuff?
I mean, it's disappointing that it's taken them so long to get any kind of new project off the ground. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, they had that superhero game in the works that apparently 2K sunk like $50 million
into. Something else rang a bell when I was like, oh, they've had a rough few years.
I think that was it. Yeah, they had this like superhero game that eventually tanked, and now they're obviously going back to what they know, which is this mafia game. Mm-hmm. The prequel kind of sounds cool. Like, if you go that far back, it could be interesting. I just want them to do it in the style of 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that I don't think 3 is good. I would echo a lot of your sentiments there. I think that's an underrated open world game for sure. I got that heavily discounted, had a really great time. Mm. But I would like them to go back to the story-driven approach of 1 and 2 and the opening of 3. Because the thing that people remember about 3 is how good that opening
was. That intro is insane.
Yeah, just how much that gets you in that story, how well-drawn the characters are, how great the sense of place is, like you said. Mm. And if they could just refocus on that, do something maybe in the 20s, like, that would be awesome. I don't even think they need to lean too heavily even into Mafia 1 and 2 story-wise.
Like, no,
they
not really.
Maybe have a few references, maybe have certain characters appear, but they could almost do their own thing, and hopefully, as long as it remains story-driven, as long as it retains the attention to detail that made Mafia 1's Definitive Edition so good, like, that would be cool.
Well, because the Definitive Edition is genuinely really, really impressive. I feel like it didn't get that much props, because I think people just thought it was a remaster, but, like, it is a full-on ground-up remake, like, and it's, especially in terms of the animations and everything. That game as well has the best approach to open-world direction, like, telling you where it turns. You're not staring at a mini-map all the time. It was like, they sort of do, like, imaginary street signs, and then they disappear. They sort of fade out as you go around the corner. I was like, that's a really cool, immersive way to, like, take me around the city without breaking stuff, and I've not seen anybody else run with that, but I feel like something like that would help Mafia sort of like distinguish itself again, because Mafia 3, a lot of people didn't like how it was more anarchic and over the top and more like GTA, whereas like 1 and 2 are way more detail focused. Like, your car breaks down, you can get out and actually fix the carburetor so it stops smoking or whatever. Pulling a random car idea or my hole, but I think that's something to do with fixing a car. But that whole approach to like world design and stuff, I think that's what they need to get back to. Do you reckon they've blown their possibilities on, they can't now redo the Mafia 2 remake properly, because they did the Definitive Edition of that, and that was the remaster that was terrible, that was one of the most broken things that anyone's ever played. And then Mafia 3 got a quote-unquote remaster, but it was just the same game with a slightly higher resolution. So you think they just bin off the trilogy and just try and start again?
I think they might. You know, I would take for sure Mafia 2 in the style of the Mafia 1 Definitive Edition, but I bought that remaster, and it was,
I remember
one of
your little face.
I was so disappointed. I used to love those games, and that remaster was just so trash. So I hope whatever this is, it's treated with the respect that Mafia 1 was, rather than phoned in like Mafia 2 and 3. That's just all I can hope. And I want Hangar 13 to actually have a project that I can work on and have fans look forward to.
I think I'm assuming that at some point we'll get a tell-all what happened thing with Hayden Blackman, because he's the founder of the company and he's left. And so, and also their parent company was 2K, who are notoriously horrible to work with in regards to like hitting certain deadlines or just prioritizing things that would let them get something out the door. I had a quick cursory Google of the superhero game. Apparently, it was upwards of $50 million spent on that game that didn't come together. Hangar 13's open world sci-fi superhero game that completely went sideways. So I imagine if you're the founder butting heads with publishers all the time, and they're going, do a superhero thing. That's what the kids like. And then you waste all the money, and you can do you have Mafia, then that goes sideways with the Definitive Editions of everything other than one, that maybe you're like, I'm actually done. I'm just going to step away from this thing.
Totally. I mean, it's 7 years of someone's life, you know, like 7 full years hitting heads against these projects that go nowhere. Mm-hmm. You probably would be like, this is just not for me.
Back when The Witcher 3 came out.
That's
crazy. And then going like, I've actually got nothing to show for it.
No, that's just, I mean, I get annoyed when I've done like 2 hours of work and it might get, you know, changed for something else. Never mind 7 full years.
I get another check to Yomi's checkpoints. Never mind Metal Gear Solid 5.
2K though, we give WB a lot of crap for, you know, wasting their studios, having these projects that go nowhere, swapping around Superman and the Suicide Squad and Batman and what have you. Mm-hmm. But 2K is probably just as bad, you know?
Oh, yeah.
What is going on with Bioshock 4? What has been going on with Hangar 13? What's going on with Ken Levine's team? You know, we've got all of these studios that should be making like stuff, should be big names in gaming. And they've just had these projects cancelled. They've had these directionless years where we've seen nothing. It's weird that so many developers have gotten into this rut. And I don't know whether it is the developers or whether it is the publishers, probably a mix of both. Mm. But it's weird now that we have 2K and WB making very similar mistakes.
Well, 2K were the ones who have had the full-on gambling mechanics in their games, like full-on slot machines, Wheels of Fortune type stuff. They were the ones who just tried to steer full bore into that stuff, and it was horrible. And the NBA games are still full of that stuff. Thankfully, the latest WWE is way more on track than it has been in like over a decade or something. But that's still made by Visual Concepts, who are the NBA devs who stepped in after the WWE team left. So there's been one thing that's been super solid coming out of 2K. I know that like NBA fans have just come to live with the state of the NBA games. But yeah, next news item down is all the Square Enix stuff, which is just that they sold off all their Western properties. You know, Deus Ex, The Avengers, Tomb Raider, Thief, and Legacy of Kain. Whilst sort of giving, and they also, there's so many things they got wrong. They've all kind of like a confluence of things that all happened at once. Because yes, they sold off all their Western properties. They're all the ones that I just mentioned. It was revealed that they lost $200 million on The Avengers and Guardians. So both the Marvel games didn't do well at all. Probably because there was zero marketing for the Guardians of the Galaxy game, even though it's very, very solid, at least story-wise. But all this stuff wrapped back around to a letter from President Yosuke Matsuda, who said at the beginning of the year that he thinks NFTs are the future of gaming and they want to double down on NFTs, and that's the way to go. However, and again, it's just hilarious timing, coming a week after they sold all their Western properties off, the NFT market is apparently flatlining, literally, as I quote, flatlining, according to the Wall Street Journal, as it's down 92%.
Amazing.
Which is hilarious. There was something that came from Tom Tenders Henderson saying that the amount of transactions going through are 92% down, but the amount of revenue is still quite high. So it seems to point to, you know, the whales, the people with ludicrous amounts of money to waste slash spend slash definitely waste, are the ones propping up the NFT amounts, but not in the actual amount of transactions that are happening. What do you think of all this stuff? Is the future of gaming in NFTs, Josh?
I don't think it is, but we know through experience that developers, I mean, publishers absolutely love their so-called whales. They love people with individuals with incredible amounts of money to pump incredible amounts of money into their live services and what have you. So I can totally see this from a business perspective, but it's like, you've got all of the, again, you've got all these great developers, you've got all of these great IPs, and you just sell them off however much money because they're not reaching your expectations. I've got a bit of advice for you, Square Enix. Have you ever tried making a good game? Have you ever tried like just being not crap? Like
just not doing Balan Wonderworld or The Quiet Man.
Not doing NFTs, just making good games. I'm telling you, man, like Square Enix are going the way of Konami at this rate, in my opinion. It's just a total waste of talent. And these studios deserve better, and I hope, I know they're going to embrace it. I don't actually know too much about that company or that group, but I hope that those developers and those IP get more love than what they had at Square.
Embracer seem to be, because they're so umbrella topic, satellite like company over the top of so many studios now, like hilariously, ironically, they are called Embracer, but the amount of stuff, if you look at like, there was a pie chart doing the rounds a few weeks ago of the amount of different umbrella companies owning everything, whether it be, you know, Xbox / Microsoft or Embracer or Tencent or whoever, and Embracer own like a good sort of 2/3 of that pie. Like they are doing extremely well in terms of acquisitions, but because they are so sort of disconnected, let's say, and they're at the very, very top, they sort of just let their teams do stuff. And it seems like, I mean, they're the ones in charge of THQ Nordic, and so like they've managed to come back very strong. And so hopefully they just sort of stay hands off. I mean, like any of us playing the Avengers could have seen what should have happened with that game. And you would hope that with the amount of IP they've just acquired, Deus Ex, excuse me, should be a big deal. Tomb Raider should be a much bigger deal. Legacy of Kain should be a way bigger deal. They're right there.
I'm shaking my hand at you because you're so right. Like, it's crazy that this has happened just after they announced that new Tomb Raider game as well.
Yes.
Like, what's going on with that? I only wonder what happens with their Japanese developers now. Like, what happens with Final Fantasy?
Fantasy VII Remake Part 2 is not coming.
What if?
Go on.
What if? And I know the rumors doing the rounds a few months ago from, I think it was Jeff Grubb and Greg Miller, who had kind of heard that Sony might have been interested in buying Square Enix. Like, that was the rumor they heard, and obviously that might not be the case. What would And I ask you this, would Sony still buy Square Enix if it was just for their Japanese properties? Because they obviously have a long history with Final Fantasy and what have you.
If they can say the words Final Fantasy is exclusive to PlayStation forever and Dragon Quest is exclusive to PlayStation forever, then yes, you've just bought the Japanese market back again.
Right.
Because for the longest time, especially for the first sort of, it's like, I don't know, 5-6 months of the PS5 being on sale, it was underperforming. It felt like a lot of the general scuttlebutt coming from a lot of the Japanese press was that most people in Japan, most longtime fans of Sony, felt like Sony had turned their back on the company. Like, they changed, almost like small things, but they changed, you know, their enter/accept button from circle to X, which is a Western thing. Like, we always use X to go into stuff. They got rid of a whole bunch of different Japanese teams. They got rid of some Japanese IP. There were just a lot of things, and they moved their headquarters to, I think it was Florida or something.
Right.
They moved their HQ from Japan to the West. So there was a lot of stuff with Sony where the Japanese audience just kind of went, you guys aren't for us anymore. Like, you're not Sony anymore. And so, which is the Jim Ryan era, let's say. Like, it's sort of like that whole thing, the Western thing. But I know the sales have stabilized. I know PS5 did take back off in Japan again, but it's interesting because, yeah, if they go, no, we're re-embracing our Japanese roots and we're proud of Japanese devs and we're buying Final Fantasy. Excuse me, why is my throat going away, Josh?
It's so emotional.
I've got all these takes coming out. And yeah, if they buy Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest is one of the biggest IPs on the planet, then I think you immediately get a huge resurge in that whole market caring again. But I mean, Final Fantasy 16 is exclusive, like, assumedly, hopefully this year. Like, their director was getting out there saying the game is finished.
Yeah.
So there is that. Maybe they're waiting to announce it alongside that.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, we've talked about this before. Like, they've already got this third-party relationship where a lot of Square Enix's Japanese games are already exclusive. Like you said, Final Fantasy 16. Mm-hmm. They've got Forspoken later on this year. Like, those deals are already in place.
Forgot that was even a thing.
Yeah,
again.
I mean, yeah. I'm not saying they're good deals. I'm just saying the deals are in place. But yeah, for me, it makes sense for Sony to just go, well, what if we just bought, yeah, and then we wouldn't have to go through these third-party things because you'd be first-party.
Mm-hmm. The whole thing with Final Fantasy VII Remake is, like, fascinating as well. Obviously, Tetsuya Nomura, Kingdom Hearts guy, came in, very much Tetsuya Nomura'd Final Fantasy VII's lore, and the way that game ends is ridiculous. And then they did the Integrade thing that was, like, almost focused on Yuffie and a sort of her story chapter, and then nothing. Like, we've had nothing at all. Like, the Integrade stuff teases what's next, but then Tetsuya Nomura stepped back as director. I forget who's took his place, but there's been no overarching plan. Like, they've said that they don't know how many installments they're going to need to tell the story, and coupled with the fact that you know, anyone that they're answering to doesn't know what's going on, any of their bosses or whatever, then it's kind of telling that they don't know, we don't know when the hell Final Fantasy 7 thing is even going to happen again.
I respect him just being like, peace out, I'm going to do Kingdom Hearts 4. Bye.
Just going back to his roots, just being like, oh yeah, just make the shoes smaller, let's annoy people about that with Sora's character design and everything. But yeah, Square Enix in a hell of a gross place right now. I mean, there was all the reports that came out that Final Fantasy VII Remake had saved them anyway. Back when the Avengers bombed, apparently it was said that if they hadn't released Final Fantasy VII Remake and that hadn't performed as well as it did, they would have gone under because they lost so much money in the moment or whatever from the Avengers, which, as we found out, cumulatively was $200 million. But yeah, it just seems like they're just working day to day, and I don't know if they have a wider plan.
I can only hope.
There's a Final Fantasy VII Battle Royale coming out.
There certainly is.
Maybe that's the way. But yes, for now, this has been the wind-up. Remember 10 years ago when we talked about Trek to Yomi?
I simply cannot. What is that?
Sometime in 2018, I think. But come find us on social media. Let us know what you think of Trek to Yomi. We'll maybe do a spoiler cast depending on if we get through the story and just if it feels like enough people want to talk about that thing. But yes, for now, this has been the wind-up. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.